Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Every dating app swipe is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Moto Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them. While everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas style games. Moto Casino, the only app worth your time.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
This is continuing coverage in the trial of Alex Murdaugh from True Crime Today.
Welcome to the third segment of continuing coverage in the trial of Alex Murdaugh here on day 12 of coverage. Let's go right to the courtroom.
Anything before the jury comes in?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Please, Court, Your Honor, Mr. Waters has informed me that he is going to call a young man named Satterfield, who was the one of the heirs of the Satterfield estate. Allegation is that Mr. Murdaugh converted those proceeds, as like all the other conversions we've heard about. The difference is, in this case, he is the victim, and, you know, Mr. Waters used the term gilding the lily the other day. He told us it meant piling on. Under the 403 analysis, and again, this is being allowed for the limited purpose of motive, we believe and would submit to the court that this is more prejudicial than it is probative. They've got records they put in of millions of dollars of theft, you know, we would offer that if he has some summary chart, or we would, pursuant to our previous objections, stipulate to it as to the loss involved in this case, for purposes of what Your Honor's already allowed, with the obviously that stipulation be subject to our previous objections, rather than calling, you know, witnesses who are victims that add nothing to the evidence that Your Honor's allowed, and we would, under Rule 403, object to the prejudicial being more outweighed, the prejudicials outweighed by any probative value.
No, yes, sir. Mr. Waters?
Your Honor, again, Mr. Satterfield testified in camera. There has already been testimony admitted again about him stealing through the fake forge from his clients, stealing from his law firm. But this is something different. This is where a situation where he was actually a civil defendant and still managed to misappropriate that money as well. And additionally, the amount of money is extremely significant. It's millions of dollars. And the other thing about this is that, as you heard from Mr. Satterfield, you know, this the fact of this being out there was kind of percolating out in the world, and he had conversations with Mr. Murdaugh as time was approaching, and Mr. Murdaugh's telling him, oh, everything's okay with the case and all the rest of it, when the money had long been misappropriated and spent by Mr. Murdaugh. So this is a different type, and it also has a connection with the overriding situation that Mr. Murdaugh found himself in. And so we believe that it still is fair game, and is not its probative value is not substantially outweighed by the danger of any unfair prejudice.
What is the timeline with regard to Satterfield?
So, Mr. Satterfield, as far as the communications with the defendant, the money, actually, the first settlement, I believe, was misappropriated not long after the boat case in March of 19. This is actually another aspect that's going on as well. There's been testimony about how the boat case changed things and created some very significant difficulties for the defendant that was coming to a head at that time. The subsequent recovery, which was much larger, of about $3.8 million, was at some point after that. However, there are, in fact, communications, and you heard from Mr. Satterfield, there are communications text messages, which I provided to the defense in April of 2021, in which the defendant is assuring him that everything, they're working hard on the case and everything is fine and all the rest of it. And so that is, again, this is part and parcel of the things that are in the these hidden aspects of this whole other life that the defendant had that are percolating as everyone moves to June of 2021. Additionally, there are calls. I think Mr. Satterfield testified as to calls in June of 2021. The records reflect some calls on June 22nd between the two of them, but there still are text messages from the defendant. Your Honor, I can have something marked at this time and pass it up if you'd like to see it. These actually were identified after he testified last time, but the defendant reaches out to him and tells him, hey, just checking on you, everything's fine, we're working on the case, it's a tough case, it's a complex case, and therefore, you know, don't worry about it, when, again, the money had been long misappropriated.
Long answer, but not to the question. I said, what is the timeline, and perhaps the text messages have something to do with the timeline. I recalled his testimony, Satterfield's in-camera testimony, something to the effect that in early June or around at or around that time.
The money was diverted in May of 2019.
Yeah, the discovery is what the discovery
did not come until
June 22nd, 2021.
Right. Satterfield testified that he heard reports at some point in time. That's my question to you.
Yes,
the timeline.
He testified that as we move into 2021, late 2021, he's hearing reports, and there are reports out there that there had been a settlement in the case, and so ultimately, there's discussions with Alec Murdoch, which he'll testify he would, you know, talk with a few times a year. About the case and was assured, even though, yes, Mr. Harpootlian's right, that money had been misappropriated a long time ago, that everything was okay, he was working hard on the case. And so that the fact of the important point to this case is that that issue for the defendant is still out there, and he's got this young man, as we move into the spring of 2021, believing that the case is still ongoing and he's still working on it. And that's the connection here as part and parcel of the overwhelming set of circumstances for the defendant.
Your Honor, just briefly, money is misappropriated in 2019. That young man testified he didn't know when he learned about it may have been a settlement. Could have been before June 7th or after June 7th. And the fact that he doesn't know when, I think, contributes to the fact that it caused for speculation that he knew something or that would have, in some way, would have influenced Alec Murdaugh to murder his wife and son. And that's what, the only reason this testimony is coming in is to show there was some immediacy. And by the way, if you look at the phone records, the only calls between these folks began on June 22nd, 2 weeks after the murders. So it's not temporal, and he can't say whether he had any knowledge of the misappropriation of the settlement. Actually, all he know about would be the settlement. You know, that again, that there was nothing immediate about this on June 7th from this particular witness. Now, again, we'd be more than willing to some sort of stipulation that that's the timeline, subject to our previous objections, rather than putting a witness up who's going to testify. He doesn't know when he found out about it. Could have been before June 7th, could have been after. And they don't even begin phone calls about it till June 22nd. And there's nothing that no action's begun, nothing coming forward after or prior to June 22nd. And these emails all occur after June 7th. So, again, this is a prejudicial versus probative, and you know, this is gilding the lily, this is piling on, this is just more trying to prejudice the jury into believing that somehow someone who steals a bunch of money in any way whatsoever would commit a murder. This is character evidence, pure and simple.
Your Honor, the final misappropriation in the Sutterfield case was in October of 2020. And again, there were press articles out there. The texts, he said these emails were after June 7th, and they're not. They're in April. Mr. Satterfield testified in camera that he remembered having a conversation in June of 2022. After that, we actually looked, and we found some phone records, which again are June 22nd of 2021, but we also found these text messages from April in which the defendant is reaching out to Mr. Satterfield and assuring him that he's working hard on the case and all the rest of it. And again, that's part and parcel of the things that were percolating out there and part and parcel of the pressures that were on him that the state's theory is he could not solve.
Your Honor, just one last point. This all began with this idea argued very thoroughly by the Attorney General that all this financial crime stuff is to prove that on the night of June 7th, he knew, because of that conversation in the office, that the jig was up, that he, in a day or two, that hearing on Thursday, everyone would know that he was a thief and everything had crashed down on him. And to distract from that and delay things, he went home and butchered his son and butchered his wife. And by the way, I might point out, that same day he learned his father was terminal and wouldn't live much longer. And that would be, in my opinion, as much of, if not more, well, enough of a distraction.
I agree.
For, you agree? That that he didn't need, I mean, there's no rational way he would think he'd need to butcher his wife and son to distract, knowing his father's getting ready to die, which would be a distraction in that community, in that law firm. So again, I think we need to get back to why we began this 3 or 4 or 5, I can't remember how many days we've been doing financial. I mean, this is a murder trial, not a financial fraud trial. And to the extent it goes to motive, again, we're more than willing to stipulate that this amount of money disappeared, the rightful heirs of it, receipt of it, didn't get it. But putting a child on the stand to talk about, and again, he didn't know when he found out about it, when he began to raise those issues.
I believe he's an adult, isn't he?
He is an adult. He has a job in an emergency room as a tech.
I apologize to the young man. He looks young to me. I'm sorry.
Anything further?
Your Honor, the only thing I would say is that the state's theory isn't as simple as that. It's broader than that. But I think that this is a different category, and it's part and parcel of everything that was going on as we moved to June 7th, and therefore is relevant for the jury to understand very much the pressures that could cause him to murder his wife and son, particularly in the face of the defense contention that he could never do such a thing.
Mr. Satterfield testified in camera that in June of 2021, he made a call to Mr. Murdaugh asking about the status of the case. He made that call, he testified to, because he had heard reports that that there was some concern about the status of the case sufficient to call him to cause him to call Mr. Murdaugh to ask about the status of it. And he testified that he could not remember if he called Mr. Murdaugh or if Mr. Murdaugh called him. But yes, I talked to him in June of 2021. That's according to the rough draft of the transcript that has been provided to the court. I find that this testimony is consistent with the state's theory of the defendant being in a frantic state, seeking to avoid disclosure of these financial crimes and thefts, and that this testimony is consistent with the state's theory. The court has granted the state's motion to allow evidence of other crimes, and this is additional evidence that that is close in point in time and is admissible, and I deny the motion to exclude it. Yes, sir.
Bring to your attention one factual issue. The Attorney General has...
Of course, I asked, is there anything else, but go ahead.
I apologize, Your Honor. I'm trying to hurry if I can, because there may be an ending to this case someday, but I'm not trying to delay it. The phone records the Attorney General is going to present through this witness indicate the only calls between the two of them were on June 22nd, 2 weeks after the murder. So if there's some phone call, there's no mystery about when the phone call came, after June 7th, 2 weeks later. So in terms of him putting Mr. Murdaugh on alert that something imminent was going to happen, it's 2 weeks later.
Well, it's impossible for anyone to know what's on one's mind or state of mind at any given point in time. But the magnitude of this case almost morphs all the others in the amount, and it is something that I would, if one is being concerned and attempting to prevent disclosure and seeking to divert attention from the impending disclosure of information, and that disclosure would likely have taken place not only for some of the others that we've had testimony concerning, but most definitely this particular one. So I understand your objection. That's a fact and issue, but I find that it's more probative than prejudicial for all of the reasons I previously explained. Yes, sir.
So,
and I don't think whether it's June 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 20th, 21st, 25th, I don't think it's of any significant difference.
Well, Your Honor, as you said just a moment ago, and if you charge a jury with this, maybe I'll sit down, which is no one knows what's going on in somebody's mind.
Right.
And maybe that's something you can tell the jury at the end of this case. Secondly, since this is
a specific charge on that intent.
Right. Moving on, we would ask two things. One, I would accept your ruling. I'm not sure I have to do that, but I'm from the old school. If you didn't preserve it,
yes, sir, I understand.
It was gone. Secondly, we would ask you to, and I know you said yesterday you weren't going to do this again, but this is, as he's just pointed out, a horse of a different color. It's a different character, kind of witness. I would ask you to read your charge on this testimony once again. And hopefully, I think that we're close to the end of this financial testimony, so it may be the last time I would request you to read it.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Obviously, leave that to the court's discretion.
Yes, sir. I have it right here. I will
Thank you. Give
it one more time.
Thank you.
Let's bring the jury. Sir, thank you. Welcome back once again. Ladies and gentlemen, the state's next witness is expected to give further testimony regarding other crimes committed by the defendant, other alleged criminal activity by the defendant. And as I instructed you earlier, the fact that the defendant may or may not have been involved in other criminal activity is not evidence of or proof that he committed the offenses alleged in the indictments against him. This testimony is allowed for the limited purpose of assisting the state in proving the state's theory or allegations regarding motive, and you may not consider it for purposes of Mr. Murdaugh's character, or you cannot consider that as for propensity to commit other crimes, or that it's more likely that he committed these other crimes which he's been charged but not convicted of. But it is being allowed based on the state's theory and representations that it helps explain the defendant's motive to commit the crimes for which he is accused. And you may call your next witness.
May it please the court, Your Honor, the state calls Tony Satterfield.
Left hand on the Bible. Do you affirm the testimony about to give the court shall be the truth, so help you God?
Yes.
State your name again for the record. Spell your last name after you sit down. And pull your chair up so we can hear you, okay?
My name is Michael Satterfield. My last name is spelled S-A-T-T-E-R-F-I-E-L-D.
Mr. Satterfield, how are you doing today?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. Tell the jury just a little bit about yourself. Where'd you grow up, and you know, what do you do for a living?
I grew up in Hampton, live in Beaufort, and I work at Beaufort Memorial Hospital.
Okay. Awesome. And court reporter's taking stuff down there. I'm really known for talking fast too, but let's slow it down so they can get everything down. You grew up in Hampton, you said?
Yes.
And you said, where'd you work?
Beaufort Memorial.
Okay, and what do you do there?
Work in the ER.
How long have you been working there?
A little over 5 years.
Okay, and where did you work anywhere prior to that?
I did.
And where did you work?
The pharmacy.
Pharmacy, okay. Who's your mom?
Gloria Satterfield.
Gloria Satterfield. And is your mom still with us?
She's not.
And when did she pass?
February 26, 2018.
And do you have a sibling?
I do.
And what's his name?
Brian.
Where'd your mom pass?
In the hospital.
Did something happen to her?
Yes.
Tell the jury what happened to her.
She had a trip and fall.
And where did that occur?
I'm not sure that date that occurred.
But where?
At Moselle in Colleton County.
Okay. Was she working for the Murdaugh family?
She was.
And what did she do for them?
She was their housekeeper, babysat for them, and anything else they needed.
Babysat, whatever they needed?
Yes.
Housekeeper? How long did she work for them?
A little over 20 years. I'm not sure the exact amount.
20 years. During that time, did you get to know the Murdaugh family?
I did.
Did you get to know the defendant, Alec Murdaugh?
I did.
Do you see him here in the courtroom today?
I do.
Can you point him out to the for the jury? Can the record reflect he's identified the defendant? Your mom worked for this family for 20 years, babysitting. She helped raise the children?
Yes.
Did you get to know Maggie?
A little bit, yes.
Did you get to know Paul or Buster at all?
A little bit, yes.
Okay. And you got to know Alec? Right?
Yes.
You said your mom had a trip and fall at Moselle at their property?
Yes.
And she go to the hospital?
Yes.
Was she ever able to tell you how she tripped or anything like that?
No.
How long was she in the hospital before she passed away?
Give and take 4 or 5 weeks, somewhere up in there.
After she passed away, was there a funeral?
Yes.
And after the funeral, did people go to somebody's house and visit like people do?
Yes.
At any point in time during that funeral or thereabouts, did you have a conversation with the defendant over there?
Yes.
And what?
Objecting to questions
by Mr. Water that respond with a yes or a no. Those are typically leading questions. Not that I'm concerned about these questions. I just don't want my lack of objection to lead to somebody's belief that he can ask questions that respond with a yes or a no.
Thank Mr. Waters.
I think my question did not suggest the answer. It said, did you have a conversation? And my next question was, what was that conversation? So what was that question, what was that conversation you had with the defendant at the funeral or thereabouts?
If I remember correctly, I'm going to kind of take care of you boys and kind of, you know.
He's going to do what? I'm sorry?
Take care of you boys.
All right. Did he say how he was going to do that?
Partially, yes.
So what did he say?
He was going to file a claim against his insurance company.
He's going to what?
File a claim against his insurance company.
His insurance company?
Yes.
Did he say how much coverage there was?
Like $505,000, I believe.
$505,000?
Yes.
And did he say anything about how much money you may receive?
The goal was to get me and my brother Brian at least $100,000 apiece.
And did any other bills need to be taken care of?
The medical bills.
For who?
My mom.
When he told you that, did you agree to do that?
Yes.
Did you view the defendant as your lawyer?
Yes.
Did you go and meet with him about it?
Yes.
Did he tell you about what to do with any paperwork you may receive?
Any paperwork or bills or anything, just send them to him.
Can I have the Elmo, please?
No objection subject to our previously made objection.
All right. Is that something you're offering into evidence?
I'm going to show it to the witness, but yes, sir. Yeah, I'll offer States 372 into evidence. Sir.
Okay. And submit it without objection.
Let me ask you this. So did you agree to let the defendant go forward with this claim?
Yes.
And I'd asked you whether or not what he told you to do about paperwork, and I'm going to show you what's been marked as Exhibit 372 to your testimony. Do you recognize that?
Yes.
Tell the jury what that is, please.
This is a cover sheet that I sent him with, I believe behind it was like a hospital bill and some kind of other important paperwork.
Okay. So you had received some paperwork in the mail?
Yes.
And did you handwrite this?
I did.
All right. And who did you send this to?
Alex Murdoch.
Put it up on the screen. And tell the jury quickly what this is about. Can you see it on the screen? I can bring it back to you if you need.
Okay. So this is a cover sheet that I attached to the documents that I sent Alex.
Okay. And what kind of documents? Do you remember what kind they were?
One was a hospital bill and one was from the trailer company, I believe. I don't recall exactly what it was.
The trailer company for who?
My mom.
For your mom. And the hospital bill for who?
Yes, my mom.
Your mom? And you sent these to him because they were relevant to the case?
Yes.
At any point in time, did you, as this case was developing, did you go and meet with the defendant at his office?
Yes.
Did he have any paperwork for you?
Yes.
Did he get you to sign some paperwork?
Yes.
Did you become the personal representative of your mom's estate?
I did.
And who gave you the paperwork to sign for that?
Alex.
When you signed that paperwork, were you aware that there had already been a...
Yes, Your Honor. Leading.
Okay. Can't lead the witness.
I'll rephrase. At some point in time, did Alex say he wanted to involve another lawyer?
Yes.
And who was that?
Corey Fleming.
And what did he tell you about that?
If I understood it correctly, I'm going to send you to Corey Fleming, my friend, because I can't do it against, you know, do the claim against myself because it would be a conflict of interest. That's how I understood it.
All right. And did you ultimately meet with Corey Fleming?
Yes.
How many times did you meet with him?
If I recall correctly, maybe once or twice.
Over the course of this case, if you had a question, who would you call?
Alex.
At some point, did the defendant, Alec, have a conversation with you about letting someone else be PR?
Yes.
And what was that conversation?
That I should let somebody else be PR because based on he's a businessman and it would be hard for the insurance to go up against somebody like that.
Okay. And who told you that?
Alex.
And what did you say to that?
Yes.
All right. And did somebody else get involved at this point?
Yes.
And who was that?
The PR, Chad Westendorf.
At that point in time, did you sign any paperwork for him to become PR?
Chad? I did.
All right. And who brought you that paperwork?
I believe I signed it at Alice's office or either I went to the bank. I can't recall.
And at that point in time, were you aware of any recovery in the case?
No.
Were you aware a recovery had already been received in the case?
No.
Did anyone at that time tell you there was already $505,000 that had been recovered?
No.
That's not in evidence. I mean, he's just throwing these numbers and times out. There's nothing in the record to indicate when it was received or how it was dispersed. I object.
I asked him, Your Honor, I'm sorry. Yes. I asked him if he was aware of that. I think that's relevant.
Aware of something that no one's said happened? I mean, I would object.
Rephrase your question, please.
Did Alec tell you there had been a recovery of $505,000 already in the case at that time?
No.
Did he ever tell you there had been a recovery of $505,000 at that time?
No.
Was there a recovery at that time of $505,000, as you come to find out?
Later on.
Later on you found out?
Yes.
And did he ever pay you one dime?
No.
Who was the PR that the defendant talked to you about appointing instead of you?
Chad Westendorf.
Did you ever meet with him?
Yes, like once or twice.
Did he ever tell you about a $505,000 settlement that already had occurred?
No.
Did the defendant ever tell you that he also had a $5 million umbrella policy?
No.
Did he ever tell you that there had been a recovery against that?
No.
Did he ever tell you that there had been a recovery for $3.8 million against that?
No.
Did he ever pay you one penny of $3.8 million?
No.
As the months went on and moving into the early part of June 2021, would you periodically have conversations with Alec about the case?
Yes.
How often do you think you would talk to Alec?
Every 3 to 4 months, give and take.
And you recall what Alec would tell you about the case?
Yes. First it started off, you know, it was a hard case, and then it was making progress.
Say that again?
At first it started off as it was going to be a hard case, and then it turned into we're making progress.
You're making progress?
Yes.
And what had the defendant told you about the most that you could recover? What did he tell you at least?
Nothing.
I'm going to show you what's been marked as State's Exhibit 463 to your testimony and see if you recognize that document.
Yes, I do.
And what are those?
These are text messages between me and Alex.
Your Honor, at this time I would move State's 463 and 453, excuse me, into evidence.
Subject to previous objections, no objection.
Okay, it's admitted.
All right, I'm going to put this up on the screen and kind of zoom it in. You got a screen over there, but if you can't see it because the writing's kind of small, you let me know and I'll bring it to you, okay? So, Do you recognize that that's on the screen right now?
Yes.
And who is that text from?
Alex.
And who is it to?
Me.
And can you read to the jury what that text says?
It says, "Hey man, just checking in, been working on case and made me think about you. Hope all is good. Call me anytime I can help."
And what was the date of that text?
April 12, 2021 at 12:47.
All right. I'm going to go to this next one. Do you recognize that text?
Yes.
And who is that from?
That is from me to Alex responding to his text.
All right. And read that text to the jury once you sent.
That text says, "Hey man, I'm doing good. By the way, how is the case going? Just curious. But how are you?"
Show you this next text. Do you recognize that?
Yes.
And who is that from?
That is from Alex to me.
All right. And can you read that to the jury?
"Finally getting some movement. Still a ways to go. Doing good. Was just thinking about and thought I'd check in. Hope to see you soon."
Still a ways to go is what he said?
Yes.
At that point in time, did he tell you there had already been two recoveries in the case?
No.
Going to this last text, what is that? Who is that from?
That is from me back to Alex responding to his text.
All right. And what does it say?
"Cool, thanks."
Hold on for me, just one sec. Yeah, I believe without objection, I'm going to strike out one of the phone numbers on here so it can't be viewed.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Around this point in time, so we're in the spring, late spring of 2021, had you become aware of any media reporting about there actually being a settlement in your mother's case?
Yes, somebody sent me a text or something saying a legal document, but I can't remember who sent it to me.
All right. And you can't remember who sent it to you?
Yes, that's correct.
Did that cause you to reach out to the defendant and ask the status of the case?
Yes.
Do you remember roughly when that was?
I believe in June.
Okay. And do you remember if that was before or after the murders in this particular case?
I believe that was after.
Okay. And have you seen some records since your since the previous time in talking about this?
Previous to the call, no.
I'll show you what's been marked as 454 to your testimony. Is that some records you've been provided?
Yes.
And those just some records of phone calls between you and Alec?
Yes.
On June 22nd?
Yes.
You have any, would you periodically reach out to the defendant and get updates about the case?
Yes.
And you had family reach out and ask you to get updates because of reading things in the media, is that correct?
That is correct.
And you had conversations with him in June of 2021?
Yes.
You don't remember if those were before or after the murders?
She already answered the question after June 7th. I would object to the leading question. I would object to the suggestion that he hasn't already answered that this occurred after June 7th of 2021. He's impeaching his own witness.
I think I'm establishing a point that's not in dispute. These records say what they say.
I think he was prefacing that question with, you don't remember when you learned about it, sometime in early June. If he's conceding the witness said he didn't learn about it until after June 7th, we don't have an argument. He's already testified to that.
Final speaking response.
Your Honor, this witness has testified he had a conversation in June. He's testified in the spring of 2021 that he became aware of media reports and reached out to him. We've already seen some texts and we have some calls. I'm just following up on the fact that he had repeated communications with the defendant asking him what is the status of my case and was told as we move in time through the murders, oh, everything's fine, I'm still working on it.
Objection sustained as to leading the witness.
Thank you. For thanking you. It's just a habit I got in and I can't seem to break it. I apologize. And by the way, if you'd ruled against me, I would still say thank you. It's just what I learned to do. I don't know whether it's an old time thing or not. But I apologize. All right.
Thank you, Mr. Harper. Just to clear this up, how often would you talk to the defendant?
3 to 4 times a year or something, I believe. I can't recall. Every few months.
Would you talk by phone or would you talk by text or both?
Both.
And when you would talk to him, would you ask about the status of your case?
Yes.
And each time you talked to him, what did he say?
It was making progress.
Making progress. Did he say it was a hard case or not?
Yes.
Did he ever tell you about how much money he might be able to get for you?
The goal was to get $100,000 apiece for me and my brother.
At any time over the years, did he ever tell you that there had already been a recovery in the case?
No.
At any time over the years, did he mention anything about having a $5 million umbrella policy?
No.
At any time, did he ever pay you one penny?
No.
You, testified earlier that you became the personal representative, is that right?
That is correct.
Why were you the personal representative and not your brother?
Because my brother is a vulnerable adult, meaning he has a disability. That my brother, he's a vulnerable adult, so he's not able to function as a normal human being to be doing stuff like that.
He's a vulnerable adult?
Yes.
After the murders happened, at some point after that, did you go seek, or did you and your family go seek additional representation about this matter?
Yes.
And who did y'all eventually go to?
My aunt and my uncle went to Mark Tinsley, and then they sent us to Eric Bland.
And are you aware of there being a confession of judgment in your case against the defendant for those missing recoveries?
Yes.
No additional objections to this document.
Yes, sir.
Your Honor, I'm offer states 352. And you're aware there's a confession of judgment in that case?
Yes.
Did you have to file a claim against the defendant for those two recoveries you never got for your mom's case?
Yes.
And I'm going to show you 352. You're not a lawyer, are you?
No.
And you have you read all that legal stuff in there?
Yes.
All right. But this has been something that you're aware of that occurred in your case, is that correct?
That is correct.
And ultimately, there's a confession of judgment in the case. Do you know how much it is right there?
$4,305,000.
All right. And is that for $3.8 million? For one of them?
Yes.
And for $505,000 for the other recovery?
Yes.
That wraps up segment three of continuing coverage in the trial of Alec Murdaugh. Press subscribe wherever you download podcasts so you don't miss any of our breaking updates and trial coverage as we bring it to you. If you like a commercial-free version of the podcast, sign up through Apple Podcasts and get it right there. Try it for 3 days free. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us for more coverage in the trial of Alec Murdaugh.
Moro Casino. America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something. But I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people. It involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public will be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.
Despiértate, que el $4 Breakfast Meal Deal ha llegado a McDonald's. Incluye un Sausage McMuffin o Sausage Biscuit, Hash Brown y un café caliente. Llévate más por tu dinero con tu Meal Deal. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.
Every dating app swipe is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Moto Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them. While everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas style games. Moto Casino, the only app worth your time.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spend on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily, and the best part, guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Moto Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino's the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.